our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Let's be honest. Don't get me wrong. It was a compelling game. It was fun to watch. It was not even close to the greatest World Series of your time.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
There's, good ball players in all shapes and sizes, quite honestly.
We're not body shaming anybody here, I guess.
Yeah, I just felt my pants get a little tighter just talking about them, so I'm...
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, are you stashing Tim Tebow in your dynasty leagues?
Yeah, no, I mean, I have him on my speed dial right now as we speak.
And when we talk about Tampa Bay prospects, we always throw it to Mike to see how bitter he can become.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 166 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode are Mike Warner and Matt Thompson. Mike, how you doing?
Man, I'm doing great. Give it up for the Cubs and their World Series championship. I know Matt Thompson loves that, so bravo to that. And I also just want to say I'm happy that I was able to witness probably the greatest World Series I've ever seen in my lifetime. So bravo to the Cubs. What an amazing series, and that's all I got to say about that.
Well, I'll throw it to Matt in a second, but I got something to say about that because let's be honest. Don't get me wrong. It was a compelling game. It was fun to watch. It was not even close to the greatest World Series of your time. Like, not even close. And, like, I mean, if it hadn't been for the just, like, blow-up at the end by the Cubs that gave the Indians a chance to get back in it, we've been talking about the entire game. Like, if you were on Twitter, you saw everybody talking about how awful of a game it was. Like, just from an actual technical standpoint, it was poor managing, poor defense. And so, like, I understand it was, like, a fun game to watch at the end of it. But, like, people need to stop saying this was, like, one of the greatest games of all time. It's not even the greatest Game 7 of this decade.
All right, so you give me a suggestion on what you think was.
I think the last Game 7 we had was a better Game 7. The Giants and the Royals in 2014.
Yeah, you're not biased at all, so
I'm totally biased, but, I mean, think about the storylines, like, how close the Royals came to winning that game. I mean, that was a better game, especially technically played, than the game we saw last night. And don't get me wrong, it was compelling, it was fun to watch, it had a lot of storylines, but people in the storylines actually overshadow how the game was played in itself, because it was a sloppy fucking game.
Well, first off, like, as far as managing goes, like, I don't see really how bad it was. Like, I understand, bringing in Chapman after you already used him for 40 plus pitches the night before. But at the end of the day, like, if you have Aroldis Chapman out there with four outs to get, like, that's fine with me. With a 3-1 lead, like, I don't understand what the problem is with that. Lester, it was one, botched, wild pitch to David Ross that hit him square in the head, who has had a history of concussion problems. And then the 50 year old fell on the ground and it let another run score. Like, that has nothing to do with management either. I don't know. I just disagree. I think it was an amazing game. Even people that didn't like baseball I was talking to today said that they stayed up all night watching that game because they were so just enamored with what was going to happen. And
it was a fun game to watch, but I think it's being a little overblown. Matt, jump in here real quick and then let's introduce our guests.
Yeah. Congrats to the Cubs, man. It was, I'm kind of with you though. It was a compelling Game 7. I mean, it was a sloppy game, that's for sure. And I think it was one of the poorest managed game we've seen from Joe Maddon and Terry Francona pretty much all series. I agree with you there, Justin. I mean, a lot of the sloppy games are the good games, though. I mean, I'm being a little bit biased here, but Game 6 in 2011 with David Freese, that was a sloppy game, but it was exciting. You know what I mean? I think that's part of the appeal for the World Series is, but again, congrats to the Cubs. I mean, for winning that, I mean, that's impressive. The process they did, Theo came in, did what he said he was going to do, win it in 5 years, built it from the ground up. It's nice to them. I mean, I don't know. Some of the fans have been following the Cubs for a month. It was hard for them to hold it all together, I'm sure, but good for them.
You hear this tone? You hear that Matt Thompson tone right now?
Don't egg him on.
Yeah, don't hear that a lot for the next 5 years. Mike Matheny for the next three.
Don't egg him on. He was staying positive there, which is a first for Matt. And speaking of building from the ground up, we are going to be talking prospects tonight. And we brought in a buddy of mine, Ralph Lifshitz from Razzball, to come join talk about prospects. Ralph, how you doing?
Doing good, guys. What's going on?
Nothing much. Ralph, tell everybody kind of what you do over at Razzball and where you can be reached on social media.
Cool. So I am the prospector in chief. That means that I'm writing about Dynasty, but primarily prospects. Try to cover the whole gamut. Everything from obviously your typical top 25, top 100, prospect spotlights, that sort of thing. To sort of some of the deeper leagues, like, 30-team leagues, salary leagues, talking about that sort of stuff. As for where you can find me on social media, you can find me at Ralph Lifshitz, LIFSHITZBB. You can hit me on Twitter. I'm pretty much on there all day long, as Justin knows.
And Ralph is a king of shit talk. We're in a football league together in which we talk shit all the time to each other. And Ralph just pretty much destroys me and everybody in the league in that department.
Early on. But I think then it sort of hit a breaking point. And I don't know. It sort of hit calm weather now that I'm sailing away with at least the regular season title, it looks like.
Oh, well, you're not sailing.
7-1.
I'm right behind you at 6-2. So
and I got that head-to-head on you, though.
Yeah, that's true. But there is a great video of Ralph out there imitating me. I will tweet it out. It is absolutely fantastic. Fake beard and all. You have to go watch it. It's absolutely amazing. And it pretty much destroyed the league because no one wanted to compete with that shit talk after that.
Yeah, I don't think we made any more videos after that. I just started putting them out on YouTube on my own.
All right, well, let's jump right in and let's talk about some prospects. Matt came up with this list. There are going to be some guys, I'll be honest with you, that I don't know very well or really at all. And so in that case, I will probably just say that. So, but that's why we have Ralph on. That's why we have Matt on. That's why we have Mike on. You guys are all prospect guys in your own right. So let's start with a guy I know quite a bit about. But not necessarily from a baseball standpoint. Matt put on Tim Tebow on this list, who is playing in the Arizona Fall League, was signed a contract with the Mets. Matt, why did you want to talk about Tim Tebow?
Well, I just put him on there kind of on the notes. I put kind of in jest because he's doing quite terribly in Arizona.
Is that shocking to you?
Kinda, it actually is. It's shocking how bad he's doing. I want to say first, I respect Tebow for doing what he wants to do and chasing dreams and stuff. There's no reason not to, but it's not going to work out. I'll say that.
Yeah, Ralph, do you have any promise that Tim Tebow could become a Major League Baseball player at some point?
Yeah, I mean, what's not to like about a 29-year-old former washed-up quarterback with like a beer league softball resume to back it up playing in the Arizona Fall League? Yeah, no, I have. I think this is a headline signing for the Mets. They grab the back pages. Maybe they'll sell a couple of Tebow name and number jerseys, and they took a flyer on him to see what could happen, with an athlete. But he's 29 years old. Maybe if he was 21 or 22, it'd be a different story. With the athleticism he has, but there's just too many at-bats to make up, and it's just not going to be there. The athleticism can't make up the sort of 10,000 hours he's got to put in there to close Gladwell.
Mike, are you stashing Tim Tebow in your dynasty leagues?
Yeah, no, I mean, I have him on my speed dial right now as we speak. I mean,
that 342 OPS in the Arizona Fall League, man, got to get it.
I mean, I definitely don't want to deny the power of Christ, and certainly he has that all up in his veins. I'm just not interested. I don't want to keep bashing him or make any jokes or whatever. He is a professional athlete. He played in the NFL and, was an amazing college quarterback. And I give him all the credit for that. And he seems like a legitimate, amazing human being, but that's not going to get me any fantasy production. And at the end of the day, he's just not built to be a Major League Baseball player. I think, you guys are right. And I think Ralph is right. They want to sell a few jerseys. I bet he sold more jerseys now than, half the Mets team. So I think that's probably the main reason they have him.
And I have no problem with that. I mean, the idea that, like, people were getting so angry about it, like, that he signed contract. It's like, who fucking cares? I mean, 90% of players, pick, you know, that signs a minor league contract never see the majors. So it's
I agree.
You know, why are people getting so upset? It's because they want to hate Tebow, you know. And thanks, Matt, for putting his name on the list so we could waste 2 minutes of everybody's time.
Hey, you know what? It's out there. That's all.
Your pleasure. It's your pleasure.
Exactly. Let's move on and talk about someone who will actually make an impact at some point in the major leagues. Ralph, what are your thoughts on Gleyber Torres? I'm going to fuck up names tonight like you wouldn't believe.
Gleyber Torres. Gleyber. His name is Gleyber Torres.
I said Torres.
What do you think about... That's a mess of it.
Yeah, so... Gleyber Torres. Torres obviously was, you know, one of the jewels of the Cubs system. Came over in that Aroldis Chapman trade. Was actually part of a big sign class for them. And apparently Cashman, when he made the deal, had the choice between Torres and Eloy Jimenez, and he took Torres. And I think the reason for that is he's going to stick as shortstop. I don't think he's going to get moved to second base. I think they're going to end up moving Jorge Mateo to second. But he's really taken a jump forward, and he's been awesome in the Arizona Fall League. His stock is way up. I own him in a couple of dynasty leagues, deeper dynasty leagues, and I've been getting hit up like crazy. So he's somebody that maybe you can consider selling high. But I don't know. The projection's certainly there. He's got plus power. He's got plus hit tool. I think some people are getting a little bit crazy. I heard someone call him Carlos Correa the other day. And I don't agree with that. But I think Torres is an interesting middle infield prospect, certainly probably within the top 40 prospects in all the majors or minors.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Torres?
Yeah, I just felt my pants get a little tighter just talking about him. So I'm all in on Torres. I've liked him for multiple years. Matt and I have talked about him extensively on the minor league podcast before. He's a top 20 prospect for me. And the fact that he's doing well in the Arizona Fall League statistically, that's not a big deal because, you know, I know that it's just a small sample size and it really doesn't matter in the long run. But guys that have been successful in the Arizona Fall League have at times been very successful in the majors. I don't think Torres gets a, you know, promotion up to the major leagues this season, but I do love the profile. I think that he's a 20 plus home run bat. I think that there's 20 stolen base upside in there. And what I specifically love about what he's doing in the Arizona Fall League and what he kind of carried over, you know, from the regular season is he has 8 walks and 5 strikeouts. I love that. And, you know, anytime somebody can control the plate, that's something you all look for from a prospect. And, like I said, you know, the fantasy upside is there for him to be a top, you know, even 5 shortstop at the position, for years to come. So in dynasty and keeper leagues, I'm 100% buying, even if you own somebody like Brendan Rodgers, who might be the number one, it has the upside to be the number one player in fantasy. I would be willing to trade him for Gleyber Torres because he's going to get there faster.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Torres?
I like that, Mike. That's a move that I would make as well. I agree with you. Torres, man, Torres is a shit. For me, he's a top 20 guy. I'm extremely aggressive on Gleyber. The plus hit tool, plus power. He's going to stick it short. Average speed that plays up because he's a real smart, heady baseball player. And he stole 21 bags this year. He's only 19 years old. 19 years old, and he slashed 270, 354, 421 in Florida State and the Carolina League, which are very, very strong pitcher leagues. And he's, like I said, only 19, turns 20 in December. He's going to be in the majors before he turns 22, and that's insane. That's extremely valuable player. They still have Didi at short. I'm not sure what the contract status is there, but I'd imagine Didi would probably stick around for a couple more years at least. Torres probably comes up as a third baseman because I don't think he's got the glove that Didi does. But he'll shift to short for years, and Gleyber will be the shortstop for the Yankees for a decade. He's that good.
I think one of the things that you mentioned that I find really important to me in terms of how well he's doing at AFL is how young he is, especially compared to a lot of the other guys that are there.
Yeah, definitely.
That, to me, is a really good sign that he's playing against higher-level competition than he has before at AFL for the most part, and he's doing it at age 19. And it'll be 20 coming into next season, but I agree with you guys. I think this is a guy to really covet. I think you may have missed out on your chance to buy him at a fairly affordable price, You know, I think the Cubs trade to the Yankees puts his stock just too far up there for most people to get him without having to give up the farm. But if you're in a rebuild mode and you're looking to shed older players, he's the kind of guy that you want to go after. In terms of Didi Gregorius, it looks like he still has another 2 years of arbitration, it looks like.
Sure, okay. So I think Torres probably will play third end, you know, because that's Didi's number one skill is his glove. I mean, the developing power is nice too, but no reason to get rid of him either, you know.
Let's go ahead and move on to another New York Yankee and a guy who is at AFL. He's not technically a prospect anymore, but Greg Bird missed all of this season with a shoulder injury. Mike, you were super high on Greg Bird before the injury. Are you still super high on him?
Yeah, I wish we didn't even bring him up on this episode because I want to keep his value as low as possible going into next season. And I'm just hope that he doesn't get a ton of hype. I'm also hoping that he doesn't do great statistically in the Arizona Fall League, which he hasn't really thus far. But I love the plate skills. He's had, you know, 10 walks to 13 strikeouts thus far. I don't really care about the batting average, and he's not hitting for a ton of power in the Fall League as of right now. But if you look at his profile, at least in 2015, you know, he hit a ton of fly balls. That's going to play in Yankee Stadium. He makes a ton of hard contact. He hit 270 against right-handed pitching, and that's mainly what he will be used for. He's not gonna, you know, hit against lefties a ton, and he will 100%, you know, fail if he does do that. But I love him as a very cheap power source in redraft leagues this year. I love him as a keeper guy. I tried to buy him everywhere last season, just you know, threw out a ton of low ball offers looking to acquire him going into you know, this 2017 year and forward. So I'm very high on Greg Bird. Nothing that has happened has changed me from that, so I love him to death.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Greg Bird?
I like Greg Bird a lot. I echo a lot of what Mike said. I mean, who'd have thought Greg Bird would be the second highest profile injury rehab in the Arizona Fall League, but with Schwarber and everything like that. But Bird isn't doing very well out there right now. The average is only 204. I mean, yeah, that's average is never going to be a real big part of his game. I'm most slightly concerned of the power. He's coming off a shoulder injury. He's in Arizona, and that's, you know, a notorious hitting environment. And he's not getting the lift and the loft on the balls that he needs to drive balls over the fence. You know, I've seen some guys on Twitter that are at the Fall League now and commenting how he still looks kind of injured and kind of looks ginger a little bit. But he's got to regain all that strength back, so I don't see a reason why he wouldn't. I mean, him playing every day. He's been in the lineup every day and out in Arizona, and that's the most encouraging sign. So I'm still up on Bird. He's going to be a nice flyer, I think, for the corner infield spot for me this year.
Ralph, what are your thoughts on Greg Bird moving into next year?
Yeah, I think I it's sort of the group consensus. But, yeah, I mean, you got to look back to 2015, you know, as a 22-year-old in the majors, hit 11 homers, you know, showed some pop. Obviously, he has good plate approach, I think pitcher recognition skills as well. Has a little bit of K issues, but I don't think it's going to kill him. But I think, you know, obviously after the unfortunate injury, it sort of slowed the hype machine, and he's a bit of a sleeper coming into 2017, and definitely somebody I tried to, you know, trade and or see if I could acquire during a trade toward the deadline last year on some of my rebuilding teams, because I have about a million dynasty leagues. I don't know about you guys. I'm sure you do. But yeah, I think he's kind of that first wave of an interesting core the Yankees are kind of bringing along now, with, you know, sort of Sanchez, Judge, Austin, and Bird as well, you know, sort of from this newly revitalized Yankees farm system.
Yeah. Well, one thing to look for, I'm sorry, Justin, one thing to look for with Bird is I'm glad you brought up Tyler Austin. I think this is probably going to be a platoon, which is fine because, I mean, he'll get all the strong side at bats, but just keep that in mind.
I mean, I'm a little bit more worried about Greg Bird, especially for 2017. The only thing that kind of saves him for me a little bit is I don't think he's going to cost just about anything. So, I mean, I don't think you're even going to see him get drafted in anything shallower than like a 15-team league in terms of redraft. I mean, Dynasty, he's probably stashed, but I think he's a guy that, if he starts off slow in spring training or continues to look injured, he's probably a guy you can go out and get for pretty cheap. I don't trust the shoulder, you know, and if the shoulder saps his power, we're looking at a guy that has minimal value I think he is kind of a high-risk, high-reward guy. Lefty playing at Yankee Stadium. But I think he's also a guy that you may actually just get nothing out of in 2017, and he's more of a guy that we're looking at as a 25-year-old in 2018 that hasn't accomplished much. Let's go ahead and move on, and let's talk about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And this was the first guy who I ever drafted a father and son in my lifetime. So I finally get to feel pretty old. I used to have Vlad Guerrero on my fantasy teams when I was younger, and now I've drafted his son. Matt, I think you were kind of turning around on him. What are your thoughts on Vlad Guerrero?
Well, yeah, little backstory here. Me and Ralph have this. We've been talking about him on Twitter quite a bit. I think we're both in consensus here. But I had the initial thoughts like Guerrero was never really on my radar as much as he should have been, and that's my fault. I kind of dismissed him because the name, he's going to get drafted way higher than he would need to be in a lot of dynasty formats. And I mean, obviously, you know, people know his dad, like you said. But I'm really, really, I was kind of taken aback by the report I saw about him on Baseball America.
Third base.
He's a third baseman, but he's going to play first. He doesn't have the body to stick at third. He'll move to first, but he's got the bat. Baseball America scouting grades, man, they gave him a 60 on the hit and a 70 on the power. That is elite combination. They gave him a plus arm, which when he moves to first, whatever. But the most compelling things for me, he's only 17 years old. He was playing against guys 2 or 3 years older than him on average, and he walked nearly as much as he struck out at 17. And the comp they threw on him was a Edwin Encarnacion with an earlier peak. And that's an incredible fantasy baseball player. So he's a guy that I am trying to get on wherever I can. And I made the mistake of passing over him due to the name, and I shouldn't. You live, you learn, I guess, right?
Ralph, what are your thoughts on Vlad Guerrero?
Yeah, it's funny that Matt brings that up, but exactly. We were talking offline about him, and it's funny. I was down in Disney World last week with my family, and I was actually like, hey, I have a really young, I have, you know, three kids, and my youngest is a baby, so he couldn't go on a couple of rides. So my wife and I sort of got to tag team it. And I'm just sitting to the side with a baby. He's sleeping in the carriage while the kids and the wife are on a ride. And I'm looking at my phone, and Matt's like, dude, you got to check out the scouting report in the chat on Baseball America, where the guy actually said he would take Vlad Guerrero over Kevin Maiton, which I still think is a little bit crazy, but
yeah,
apparently I was sleeping on Guerrero. Like I said, I think I sort of looked at it as like, hey, you know, some people thought Martinez was the top international prospect. They even saw Lucius Fox some places last year. And Yadier Alvarez, you know, pitcher that ended up signing with the Dodgers. And then I saw Vlad Guerrero. And it turns out that I guess Guerrero, you know, based on the results this year, you know, he had a solid debut this year in the Appy League. He was the youngest player in the league, slash 271, 359, 449 with 8 homers. Showing that kind of power when he's only, you know, 17, 18 years, you know, turns 18 actually in spring training this year. So he's still 17. And as Matt said, you know, Baseball America in their top 10 system grades gave him a 70 grade power as a kid. I mean, that's unbelievable. I'm pretty jacked up to see what Guerrero can do. And yeah, the comp was Edwin Encarnacion. So
that'll make you jump, fantasy. Right? Yeah.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Vlad?
Love him to death, but I mean, I'll be prepared to add him in redraft leagues in 2022 at some point. And
oh, no way. He's going to be up to the majors before he's 20 years old.
I'm just messing around. This is the thing. I love Vlad Guerrero. I actually have him in the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Dynasty League. So, I mean, I've liked him for about a year now. And I don't think he's playing in the Arizona Fall League, if I'm not mistaken. I don't see any registered at-bats. So, no. I mean, we won't be able to see what he does in the offseason. So this is kind of a wait-and-see type deal. But if you want to know his upside, yes. He is a, you know, top 3 round, maybe even top 2 round upside type player for fantasy at some point. You're dealing with, again, a guy that's 17 years old and, you know, held his own. And I think that the sky's the limit. So I love him for now, but, you know, very young. I think it's a lot to bank on somebody making the major leagues before they're 20, but again, I still believe in the upside.
Yeah, I've been a big fan of his since he was drafted. I mean, I didn't think he would be this touted. I thought he was more of a guy that, you know, may get to the major leagues at some point and be a major league average kind of guy, or maybe a little bit above that. But, you know, I'm pleasantly surprised to hear these reports coming from Baseball America and coming from the minor leagues. And I really like what Matt said, because that to me is a huge deal for a 17-year-old, is he's walking 12% of the time and only striking out 12.7% of the time. That to me is a huge deal, going up against guys who are older than him, showing patience at the plate. And I think this is a kid that you can still go out and get fairly cheaply.
Yeah, this is your last chance, though. So better do it this offseason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do it now. You know, go out and try to steal him from somebody else. Let's go ahead and move on and talk about Brett Honeywell. And when we talk about Tampa Bay prospects, we always throw it to Mike to see how bitter he can become.
Oh, man, I wish I did not talk about the Rays ever. I'm still very intrigued by Honeywell. I still like Taylor Guerrero, more than I like Honeywell long term. And, you know, Honeywell pretty much gave us a long scare this season, especially, you know, minor league guys. There was just kind of a question as to, you know, what he might need for his elbow. And I'm still kind of a little bit hesitant on what that actually is. I'm glad that he's back and pitching, not pitching that great in the Arizona Fall League, but, you know, he's still a very highly talented arm. I think long term, he's more of a 4 or 5 for fantasy if everything kind of shakes out right. But for now, I think we still have at least a year until we might see him in the major leagues.
Ralph, what are your thoughts on Honeywell?
Yeah, I think that was spot on. He's probably more like a 4 or 5 eventually in terms of, you know, where he's going to slot in your fantasy team. He's probably like a number 2 in terms of his high end, you know, sort of a mid-rotation starter at worst in terms of his floor. He's got that famous screwball. So I think he's sort of an interesting prospect to a lot of people. You know, the K rate, you know, has been solid. You know, it certainly took another jump this year. I mean, he's hit double digits a few times throughout his minor league career. You know, has some good control, gets a lot of weak contact with a fastball, throws 5 pitches, throws all of them for strikes. So he's gotten good ratios. I don't think he's some people overrate him a little bit. I don't think he has, you know, ace potential or anything like that. But he's definitely, you know, a good, safe pitching prospect. And there aren't many of those. Probably going to spend some time in the majors, I would imagine, toward the end of 2017.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Honeywell?
Yeah, those two guys nailed it. I like this kid. The 5-pitch mix is what's big for me. He throws every pitch for strikes and can throw them at any time. That's a superior thing to have for a kid that's 21. He'll be 22 opening day. He'll be up sometime next year, which is kind of why I threw him on this list. Tampa Bay, while not being as aggressive with pitchers, I think he'll be up at the end of the year next year, like Ralph alluded to. The screwball, he gets the most pub for, but, I mean, he really should be getting more publicity for that fastball, which is a plus pitch with the movement in the mid-90s velocity. He can touch 97, gets that weak contact. He's had a minor elbow scare, turned out to be much, as he's pitching in the Fall League, which is a great sign. Numbers in the Fall League are what they are. I mean, it's a hitting environment, and it's 20 innings, so don't get too worked up over it. Honeywell should strike out over a batter an inning for me. He's going to limit the walks. And Tampa Bay does pretty well developing pitching. So I like Honeywell long term. I'm a little bit higher. I think he could be a fantasy number 3. But, yeah, I'm intrigued.
Would you rather have Honeywell or Jacob Feria long term, Matt?
Honeywell for me.
Mike?
Feria reaches the show faster, mm-hmm. or quicker, but Honeywell is stays in the rotation for sure, so I'll take Honeywell.
What about Mike? You rather have Feria or rather have Honeywell?
Feria is definitely safer, so I would go Feria, but I do think Honeywell has a little bit higher upside.
Ralph, what about you?
Yeah, I think Honeywell, it's not even a question in my mind. I think, you know, Feria is the back of the rotation pitcher. I think, you know, the higher upside with Honeywell and better floor. So I think he's a better prospect.
Okay. I'm not going to talk about Honeywell because I don't know enough about him to, and I haven't seen him pitch, so to make a judgment. So I will go based on what you guys are saying. Let's move on to Tyler O'Neill, who is kind of a hot name prospect kind of around. Ralph, what is your thoughts on Tyler O'Neill?
I am a huge fan of Tyler O'Neill. I think I'm probably like the high guy on Tyler O'Neill. I've been sort of hacking away in early form of my top 100, and before adding in guys that were right at the limits, because I was doing it sort of in September and put it down as I started doing some of these system reviews that I've been doing over on Razzball. I love him. I think he's probably top 15 for me in terms of a fantasy prospect. He's sort of your classic mashing corner outfielder. Hits for a lot of power, you know, has a nice uppercut swing, very strong, made improvements in great strides this year in terms of the walk rate, cut it by about, in terms of the walk rate, jumped it by about 5% and cut his strikeout rate by about 5%. Probably was the best full season double A ball player in 2016. He's been tearing the cover off the ball in Arizona. Like his approach, you know, love the power. I'm a big fan of O'Neill. I'm, you know, I call him the king of the North because he's Canadian, man. I love Tyler O'Neill.
Mike, what are your thoughts?
So,
what are your thoughts on him?
Based on him being Canadian, I just have this thought in my head that he's kind of like Pedro Serrano. Like whenever somebody like strikes him out, he's like, "That was a good pitch. Good job, eh?" You know, like just real polite about getting struck out on. But like, this is my thing about O'Neill. Like when I look at his stats, I think that he is an absolute masher, right? Like, yeah, especially this last year, kind of like Ralph alluded to, you know, he upped his walk rate this year and he dropped that strikeout rate, which, you know, Matt and I have again talked extensively about O'Neill on prior shows. And that was the main concern is his strikeout rate, and him improving that is certainly an amazing thing. And then, you know, the fact that he, you know, got Double A Player of the Year as well is amazing, is also amazing. My problem with him is that when I watched him live, you know, I watched him in the Futures game last year against the top competition. I don't think that he is built. His frame is not very big. You know, it says they list him at 5'11". I feel like he's like 5'9" even. And I don't love the look. Like he doesn't seem like the type of guy to me that is going to hit 30 home runs in the major leagues on a consistent basis. And, you know, I mean, that's just based on the eye test and a very small, you know, a very small sample of an eye test as well. But, as far as just looking at him statistically, I still think that he is has the possibility to be a great fantasy contributor, but the strikeouts are still apparent. And, you know, even in the fall league right now, he has 17 strikeouts to 4 walks. I think as he rises up levels, this is still going to be a concern. And, you know, Bill, you know, when you also bake in his frame, and I just don't find him to be that athletic, that adds some risk to him that I think other people aren't kind of putting into their analysis.
Matt, what are your thoughts on O'Neill?
I'm glad me and Mike talked about him a little bit pre-show. I'm glad Mike brought up the body. We kind of talked pre-show how we were concerned. He looks a little stiff. He's not the most athletic guy. I think it's worth noting, though. I mean, his dad is like, as far as I know, he's like Mr. Canada, like weightlifter, body lifter dude. Massive biceps like O'Neill has and everything like that. So he knows how to get big. He knows how to do all that. But, you know, baseball players, you need to be a little bit more limber. So, you like to think staying healthy might be a concern of his down the line. But, like, another interesting thing I like to look at, too, like, on baseball perspectives, they have similarity indexes. Like, I don't use those as comps, per se, but you get an idea of what kind of player he is. And the top five names on Tyler O'Neill's list are Domingo Santana, Jay Bruce, Javier Baez, Giancarlo Stanton, and Travis Snyder. What do all those guys have in common?
Strike out like a motherfucker.
Yep, exactly. And that's going to be the player. But like I said, like we always kind of harp on, strikeouts aren't as big of a thing now as they were years ago. I still like the upside for O'Neill. He's got a decent amount of speed. If you can deal with potentially low batting averages and some power, I think he's a useful guy for you.
He's a guy like I'm. Or is anybody else worried like I am that he may not do well in the outfield, especially like in a place like Seattle?
Yeah, I believe, didn't he have an error or two in the Futures game, if I'm not mistaken?
I know he had one, at least. The ball, he didn't cut off a ball in the, or went to cut off a ball in the gap, and I think it got by him. I know that. I think he had one.
I worry he's a guy that could end up getting moved to first base or to DH.
He's got the bat for it, potentially.
But it still limits his value, you know, quite a bit. Though, I mean, sure. First base isn't as deep as it used to be, at least at the major league level. I mean, I love the power. I love the fact that he has a little bit of speed to his game. Stole 12 bases this year, or 13 bases this year, and 16 last year. But to me, I do worry about the defensiveness. The body type isn't your typical baseball body. So that is a little bit troublesome to me in terms of where he'll fit in defensively. But I think the power is obviously legit. And I agree with you, Matt. The strikeouts aren't as big of an issue to me as they would have been maybe 5 or 6 years ago because of the way the game is going.
Well, I think the thing is with O'Neill, too, in the strikeouts, is it's not like he's striking out 35% of the time. No. He's striking out like 25% of the time.
Sure.
So, I mean, it's not absurd. And he's young enough at, 21 that he can still make improvements there. I mean, he's probably your, DH or, corner left field, outfield kind of guy. But he can hit. I mean, he hit 290. He was competing for a triple crown this year. So it's not like the guy can't hit for average, and it's not like his BABIP was absurd. If you look at some of his spray charts, I mean, he hits power to all fields. I think he's just a good power hitter. And I think, in baseball, it's one of the few sports where, you can tend to underestimate guys based on size. And there's, good ball players in all shapes and sizes, quite honestly.
We're not body shaming anybody here, I guess.
I'm in no position to do that myself.
So. I just want to say with like my tepidness on him is like, when was the last time Seattle brought up like a star-studded hitting prospect?
They got two of them now, though.
I suppose, in theory, but like I just, that's something that I also kind of have in the back of my mind is that, there's some organizations that just churn out great hitting prospects, and then there's others that just don't, and that's kind of a little bit of my worry.
Yeah. And I think, there's a lot of systems that don't churn out, great players for a long time and then, hit on a few guys. So, I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
It's going to happen too. I mean, eventually a broken clock is right twice a day. Right. So, well, they got a hit once in a while. Maybe they back into Tyler O'Neill and might have had Kyle Lewis fall in their laps, and they got a couple of guys now. But I know. Like I said, I'm the high guy in O'Neill. I certainly admit that.
Yeah, I like him a lot. I think that there's certainly a story I can tell myself where he is a great fantasy player. I'm just a little bit, I'm not willing to buy fully yet. Which obviously will lead to me not having him in a ton of leagues right now.
All right, let's move on to a guy that I love, and I have
threw him on here just for you.
Yeah, I know you did. It's like, hey, let's throw Justin a bone. Let's give him someone he knows quite a bit about. That's Bradley Zimmer of the Cleveland Indians. I've been extremely high on this guy since he came out of college. For those who don't know, he went to college in my backyard, University of San Francisco. So I got to see him play coming up through the ranks at University of San Francisco. I'll throw it to you, Ralph. What are your thoughts on Bradley Zimmer?
Yeah, I mean, power, speed, approach, strikes out quite a bit. Another guy that strikes out, but like you said, that's like sort of common for anybody with power and approach. But his walk rates are absurd. I mean, he walks like 15% of the time. So he could come up now, get on base. He's going to steal bases. He's got 30 steal speed now. Probably 15 to 20 homers. He's a very exciting fantasy player. Never going to hit for a high average, but he's going to give you potential 4 to 5 category if you're in OBP leagues production. Big fan of Zimmer.
Yeah, this is a guy that I made a bold prediction of over at FanGraphs when I did my piece at the beginning of the season and said in 2017 he will be a top 100 draft pick because I thought he would come up this last year. So I'm just going to roll it over and say in 2018, people are going to be taking him inside the top 100, which means this year you should take him as a flyer in redraft leagues. I think he is a stud. I think he has a potential at some point to be a 25-35 kind of player. Ralph's right. The average is probably not going to be there, but if you play in OBP leagues, that will be there. This is the kind of upside we thought we would get from a guy like Jock Peterson that never really delivered on it. I think Bradley Zimmer will, and guys like Tyler Naquin and Lonnie Chisenhall are not going to keep him out of the Indians outfield next year. So this
Lonnie
is guy,
Chisenhall sucks. I just want to say that.
Well, and I think the Indians would have been in a hell of a lot better spot had they just brought Zimmer up at the end of the season to get him on their playoff roster.
A plus defender, shit. Yeah. They could use that.
I think he would have been their best defender. Had they brought him up, August 31st, so he'd been eligible for the postseason.
Yeah, I was shocked that he didn't get the call and see you know, 30, 40, maybe even 50 at bats in majors. I figured he was a surefire September call up. I know they were in the hunt, and I guess, you know, that's what it came down to. But even then, I mean, they sort of were going to win that division. I don't know why he didn't get brought up. Yeah, it's nuts, man. I think he could have definitely contributed to that team instead of, you know, pinch hitting Michael Martinez there in game seven. But let's not get back on that topic. Right?
Mike, what are your thoughts on Bradley Zimmer?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been very high on him. The pros are, yeah, he's a great defender and he knows how to take a walk. He's polished. You know, coming out of college, he has always kind of maintained that power speed combo that we love for fantasy. I think I've overrated his power, though. He's just, as much as I thought that he could be a 30 home run guy in the majors, he just really hasn't shown that much power in the minor leagues quite yet. I'm not ruling it out for the future. One thing I am concerned about is that he was just flat out overmatched in AAA. And that could have been part of the reason they didn't bring him up is because he was, you know, striking out 40% of the time once he got brought up to AAA Columbus. And that's certainly a problem. Do I think that that's something that persists? No, I don't. But I do think that this is a guy that, you know, for fantasy purposes could be a 2020, at least 2020 guy, maybe 2030. And, you know, I mean, he already has 7 stolen bases in Arizona Fall League. So, I mean, he's obviously found one skill that he is particularly great at. When you kind of factor in that he won't be a good batting average asset, which doesn't really matter to me, that kind of drops his value a little bit in terms of, you know, long term, if you want him as like a top 5 round guy. But for the future, I think that he is going to be a consistent, you know, at least 15 to 20 home run guy and 20 to 30 stolen bases.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Zimmer?
Yeah, Mike brought up the fact that he struggled in AAA with his, you know, 37% K rate, which is that's not ideal. The walk rate, though, while he struggled, was still very, very strong at 14%. So even like a guy like Zimmer, when he does struggle at the plate, will still be able to provide at the very least runs and stolen bases and stuff because he will take a walk. He's, like we said, he's a plus defensive player in center field. A little bit trouble with the projected hit tool. I saw in a chat, the reason why I kind of included him was, number one, for you, Justin, because I know how much you love this guy. And number two, I saw a chat on Fangraphs with Longenhagen, and he put a 40 on Zimmer's hit tool, and that's disturbing. But, I mean, the numbers that he's put up in the minor leagues this season kind of lead to that. He's not going to be a high average guy like we kind of discussed, but the stolen bases are there. He's going to steal 30 in the major leagues. He's a high floor guy, which is also important because like we said, the defense and on base percentage will keep him in the lineup. I don't know why he wasn't in the majors this year, especially because they had so many suspensions and they lost Marlon Byrd and Almonte for PEDs and everything like that. And Naquin struck out every single at bat in the playoffs, and Zimmer could have done that while playing defense. So it was kind of strange, but I'm still in on Zimmer, so you should be too.
All right, let's move over to a guy I don't know a whole lot about, and that is Zach Collins of the Chicago White Sox. Drafted as a catcher in the most recent MLB draft. From what I've read, it sounds like he probably won't stay at catcher. Ralph, what are your thoughts on Zach Collins?
Yeah, see, I think everyone thought coming into the draft when he was coming out of Miami that he was a guy that definitely would not stick at catcher. And it turned out that he got drafted by the White Sox, who seemed to be the perfect organization for him to stick at catcher because they don't really seem to value catcher defense. And that's just a historic thing at this point. So he ended up playing catcher almost entirely, you know, during his stint in the minor leagues, played mostly in high A. So it was an aggressive assignment. He showed there, you know, slash 258, 418, 467. You know, I think the big thing with Collins, it's not going to be the batting average. He's going to strike out a little bit, but he's got power. So this could be a power hitting, you know, catching prospect if he sticks there. And I think the White Sox are the right organization. So that's definitely helpful in terms of what his value is. There are some people that rank him, you know, within the top, you know, two or three players in terms of first year player drafts this year for dynasty leagues.
Wow. Matt, what are your thoughts on Zach Collins?
See, well, Collins is kind of interesting with me because, I mean, he's two prospects in one, really, for me. If he was to be converted to a first baseman tomorrow and the White Sox just all of a sudden just stopped giving up catching, he could be in the major leagues next year. The bat's there. The home runs, the home run power is there. There's so much. He's a big, strong dude. He's going to pop 30 home runs easy if he can control the strikeouts enough. But now they're like trying to develop him as a catcher, which I get that and I'm cool with it. But that's going to slow down his ETA so long in the majors because, you know, you got to work on all that stuff with the catchers and pitch framing, pitch calling, all that stuff that we can't quantify by looking, you know, at minor league scouting reports and stuff that's not going to be easily available for us to look up. So, I mean, I'm kind of anti-catching prospect as it is for multiple reasons. But when I mean, you look at Collins, it's an interesting profile for sure. I mean, I saw one of the my favorite draft sites I follow, prospectdraftreport.com, kind of likened to the way they put it was a 90% Joey Votto, meaning like the slash line for his peak would be 280, 380, 480. And you look at that, that's essentially what Yasmani Grandal did this year. And I think that's an exceptional player. But at first base, you want to do a little bit better than that. But at a catcher, I mean, that's a stud. But ideally, he's one of those guys that kind of like Schwarber catches like 20 games a year just enough to keep the eligibility and plays first base and DH a lot for your fantasy team because he can rake. And, you know, you need to know that. But he's a hell of an offensive player, that's for sure.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Zach Collins?
Yeah, I mean, a great catcher in college ball. He was amazing for Miami and a very high pedigreed guy coming into the draft this year. I have a lot. There's a lot to like in his bat. So certainly you want him to stick a catcher, even though defensively it might not be there for a while. You want him to stick a catcher so that in fantasy we can use him there. I think the bat is certainly more advanced than his defense. It's just going to kind of come down to how long they keep him in the minors for the defensive side of things, or if they decide, hey, you know what, we just need the bat for the major leagues. I mean, the White Sox have no left-handed power in their lineup, so the sooner they bring him up, the better. I like him. I'm not going to pay everything that I have for him, but I think that he's a decent piece. You know, it's hard to really gauge where his value is because we don't know if he's going to definitively stay a catcher or not. I would say if he does stay a catcher, he has the ability to be a top 10 guy for a long time. But if he doesn't stay a catcher, then we're looking at him as more of a lower level corner in fantasy. And I'm just not going to be really interested in that.
Yeah, my whole issue with Collins, if he does stay at catcher, is what Matt mentioned is typically major league organizations like to slow roast that position in the minor league levels. So it takes guys quite a while to get up. He's already 21 years old, so we could be talking about a guy we may not see until he's 24, almost 25. And at that point, I mean, look how easily some catching prospects kind of fall off our radar and off our map. I mean, this time last year, we were talking about Jacob Nottingham being a guy that could be very, very interesting for fantasy, and now he's not on most people's top 100 lists. So to me, I'm not interested in catching prospects for the most part in dynasty leagues. I'll just pick from the litter once the guys get up or make trades once guys get up. But I'm probably not interested if they're keeping him at the catcher position.
I'm the same way traditionally, but I mean, Collins is the most advanced bat we've ever seen as a catching prospect in the last couple of years get pushed into the minor league. So he might be an exception for me. But like you said, the slow roast of a catcher is a typical thing, and that's going to slow him down significantly. So you kind of have to bake that into the price you're going to pay for him. So he's a very, very tough player to evaluate heading into this season.
And who knows? Maybe he takes a Buster Posey type path where, you know, because he had college experience, he comes up quicker than maybe we would expect from the catcher position. But I just think there are guys in that draft that I like quite a bit more in terms of upside anyways that I know will probably be at the major league level either sooner or I just like kind of what they bring to the table, you know, from a long-term perspective.
And that's completely fair. I mean, I respect that.
Let's go ahead and move on and talk about a guy that I know absolutely nothing about, including how to pronounce his last name. And that's Eric Fetty.
Got it.
Oh, nice. Fetty
Wap. Fetty Wap, bro.
Fetty Wap. All right. He is a pitching prospect from the Washington Nationals. I have never seen this kid pitch. I barely remember him from the 2014 draft. But honestly, I couldn't tell you what he throws, how fast he throws, anything like that. So I will throw this straight over to Ralph. Tell me about Eric Fetty.
Yeah, so he was a guy that this is sort of what the Nationals are famous for, is taking shots on guys that have arm issues. So he had Tommy John surgery. So after being drafted in 2014, he didn't end up pitching until late 2015. Ended up, you know, playing in high A this year for about 17 starts before being promoted to double A. Pitched pretty well. This is a guy that had, you know, top pick, you know, sort of ace upside in terms of what his production was when he was in college and what the numbers sort of showed. I don't know if he necessarily has that upside now. I think he's more of a very solid number three pitcher. You know, maybe you're talking like, you know, Ks per nine type stuff with, you know, two or three walks per nine. And, you know, he's going to pitch in the National League. I think he's a pretty safe pitching prospect at this point. I'm not going to go, you know, sort of gaga for him, but he's solid.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Fetty?
I really like Fetty. That's I included him on here because the way he finished last year was impressive. He was up over, you know, his last couple starts. He had 12 strikeouts. Eight strikeouts, you know, then he had another one with 10 a couple weeks ago with nine in front of that. He's an advanced arm. He's going to be in Washington at some point this year, which is another reason for the inclusion. I think people need to know more about this kid. Tommy John survivor. That's what the Nationals do, baby. That's why they got Giolito. They do Fetty, Strasburg. I mean, they have relative success with these guys. You're looking at a guy with a plus fastball, a plus slider, good command. He's going to be a strong ratio guy. His ratios are going to help you a lot in roto formats and everything. I think he's a strong fantasy number three. I'm looking forward to Fetty when it comes up. He's going to be a nice solid back. He's going to be one of those guys you put in your lineup and you don't worry about it because you know what you're going to get, and it's going to be good stuff. Gets a lot of ground balls. With the strikeouts, that's always two things I look for. So I expect big things from Mr. Fetty Wap.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Fetty?
Sorry, I'm a teenager, so I literally can't stop thinking about Fetty Wap now.
I have no idea what that even is a reference to.
I don't know either. I just say it.
You don't know who Fetty Wap is? Ralph, no. Do you know who Fetty Wap is?
Yeah, I definitely know who Fetty Wap is.
I was going to say, you know Tejal Bennett, so there's no way you don't know who Fetty Wap is. As far as Eric Fetty, I like him a lot. This is again, kind of like Ralph alluded to, this is another one of those Nationals, like, not reclamation projects, but willingness to take a risk on a guy that had Tommy John, and it looks like it's paying off. You know, he has a really nice hard slider that I really dig, really decent control as well, really a nice mid-90s fastball. I like the fact that he threw over about 120 innings last year, which means that they might stretch him out to, you know, 150, 160, maybe even more. This season with a late call-up to the Nationals, which is awesome. I don't think that he has the ability to be a number one, but I do think, you know, number three, high-end number three, low-end number two is certainly a spot that he could be. He's working on a changeup as well, which by, you know, all accounts is improving and could also be a plus offering for him as well. Limits home runs very well. I like everything about him. So I'm definitely in on Eric Fetty, certainly a name that a lot of people probably don't know either. So I'm willing to buy.
Yeah, I'm looking up Fetty Wap's Wikipedia page. I have no
he's
idea.
He's got one eye.
Yeah, he's got I have one no idea eye who this guy it. Is.
He what? He's got like, one eye?
Yeah, he seems like a rapper or R&B artist.
He says all the time, yeah, baby.
No? Yeah, Haitian influence. I would just like to point out his real name is Willie Maxwell II.
I'd go by Fetty Wap too, I guess.
Yeah, I would too. let's go ahead and kind of close out our last few guys. The next guy we're going to talk about is a guy that I'm still a little bitter over because my Giants traded Phil Bickford to the Milwaukee Brewers. Matt, what are your thoughts on Phil Bickford?
Are you more bitter that they traded Bickford for Will Smith and then refused to use Will Smith late in games? Or
well, he wasn't good when he came over, so like I don't know what you're. I just don't like the idea of trading a guy or trading a guy with the upside of Phil Bickford when your minor league system is truly atrocious now.
Yeah, I like Bickford a lot. I was real high in him before the trade, and. You know, me and Mike at our trade deadline show, we thought he was the best arm moved at the deadline. And I like the fastball. He's kind of has a little bit of velocity issues. He goes back and forth, but I think it should settle in 93, 94 range, which is nothing wrong with that at all. It moves a ton, and that's the late life is what makes him hard to barrel up. The plus slider is in the pipeline. It looks like he flashed it this year. He had a very, very good season, striking out well over a batter per inning. Suppressed hits very well. He walks a little bit too many guys. That's the issue with him. He's a 6'4", 200-pound right-hander, big dude. First-round pick of last year from the College of Southern Nevada. I believe that's where Bryce Harper went.
I thought Bickford went to Cal State Fullerton.
He did, and he transferred out. Then he flunked a marijuana test pre-draft.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of dropped the stock a little bit, and the Giants picked him up. Giants are good with pitching prospects. Flipped him to the Brewers. I think he'll be fine there. I do question if he's a starter long term, but I mean on the plus side of that, if he's not a starter, he will be a closer. He's a dominant late inning arm for me. If not a starter, so I have him a number two ceiling or closer. So that's very, very valuable in fantasy. So I'm all over Bickford. He was only in A ball this year, and this year going to Double A is going to be a huge season for him. So he's a guy I'm definitely watching hardcore this year.
Ralph, what are your thoughts on Bickford moving forward?
Yeah, I think Matt sort of touched on all the bases there in terms of his concerns, or his velocity sort of goes up and down. But the thing is, the results have always been there. He gets swings and misses. He gets a lot of strikeouts. Control can be wonky at times, but he's had good control in stretches too. He's sort of inconsistent in terms of that, but he gets a lot of weak contact, a lot of ground balls. I think you sort of got to like Bickford. I think that was definitely a steal. I don't know what they saw in Will Smith. I don't know. Maybe they thought there was some more magic or something, like he was going to be like the next Wade Davis, like guy that came out of the race system.
I think they were looking for a Jeremy Affeldt. A guy who could come in late as a lefty, give you an inning or two, and really bolster that bullpen. And what they got was a steaming pile of garbage.
Maybe they thought they were trading for the Fresh Prince.
Yeah, maybe. Mike, what are your thoughts on Bickford?
Yeah, he's like the ultimate high upside arm. He does have a problem with control. I'm trying not to mention everything that these guys have already said, but in terms of me, evaluating what he could be to a fantasy team for the future, I think that he could be an ace. He needs to pack on some weight. They say he's 200 at 6'4". I've seen him a couple times, and he looks like he's about 150. Like, the guy needs to pack on some muscle.
Definitely.
And once he does that, I think that he'll have more consistency with his velocity. He has a nice changeup, but it's still developing. It's something that he needs to work on a bit. I don't like that he went to Milwaukee. I'll say that. I liked him a lot more when he was with the Giants, just like I'm assuming everybody did. Milwaukee doesn't have a good history with their pitchers, and I don't know what exactly they will do with him in the minor leagues. I know 4 of his last 8 starts with the Brewers system ended up with him walking 4 or more guys, so that's not a good first impression for me, but I still have him graded highly. I think that he's going to be the ultimate kind of risk reward guy, because I'm not getting a guy in the minor leagues on my dynasty team to be a reliever. He's either going to be a nice starter for me, or I'm going to end up trading him. So I'm hoping for him being an elite starter.
I think there is a good likelihood that he ends up as a closer.
It's a possibility.
And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that he can't end up as a starter. And I think if he can get the control issues kind of under control, he could be a decent starter. I just don't have a lot of confidence in his changeup yet. I love his fastball, love his slider, but the changeup to me is a negative pitch so far. And I mean, he's still so far away that he could add a pitch, change a grip or something, and maybe it becomes an average pitch. But to me right now, he's a fastball slider guy with poor control, and that to me screams a bullpen arm. I hope it's not, because I like him, and I think he has a nice ceiling. But especially in Milwaukee, I don't know if he's the kind of guy that I necessarily want anymore. Leaving San Francisco took a huge hit to his value.
I'm wondering if San Fran was okay trading Bickford because they have a little bit more confidence in Tyler Beattie, who I don't think anybody
really like.
Yeah, oh, I love him. Took a step forward this year for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I saw him pitch a ton over here in Vanderbilt, and you know the guy lacked consistency in terms of his walks, but when he was on, he was on. So maybe this is kind of a step in the right direction for Tyler Beattie and his value, as opposed to looking at it, you know,
and
from the
Beattie's
other perspective.
Beattie's never going to see the major leagues in San Francisco.
You don't think so?
No, he's going to be traded.
Why?
So, yeah, I don't. They have to keep him, right?
No, they don't, because look at their rotation right now. I mean, where is he going to play? They've got all those guys locked up for a while.
Yeah, but I mean, so who is in their rotation? They have Cueto, Mad Bum, Matt Moore. Who else is there?
Though? Samardzija and Matt Samardzija. Kane.
Oh, well, Matt Cain's going to last like 30 innings.
Yeah, but that's a fifth starter. Who cares?
Yeah, but Beattie can easily go in there.
Beattie's got upside. Exactly.
A rumor that was being floated around today was was Beattie for Ian Kinsler. Or, you know, a package including Beattie for Ian Kinsler.
Man, Detroit's got to jump at that.
Yeah, so, yeah, absolutely.
You know, but I mean, if you're the Giants, you got to jump at that. You know, you need the offense.
Yeah, so, we'll see. They need bullpen more than anything.
Well, they'll address that in free agency, but there's no offense to go out and get in free agency this year. So I think the Giants use Beattie as a trade chip as his stock is, you know, somewhat high. I would be surprised if Beattie is in the Giants minor league system by August.
But that just answers my question right there. If the Giants are going to give Beattie and get back something like Kinsler, that says to me that the Giants valued Beattie much higher than somebody like Bickford, who they only got Will Smith for.
For sure. We're gonna cut the last guy off the list. We're just gonna finish with Clint Frazier. So, Ralph, why don't you give me your thoughts on Clint Frazier now that he's in New York?
I just have to say one thing about Tyler Beattie. He's from the next town over from where I live, actually. Do you guys know he's a rapper, too?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
He just dropped
out. Amazing.
Young Beattie. Look it up. He like, raps about, like, being from Boston. He's got a song, like, it's called, like, The Burbs to the Ville.
Oh, my God. Oh. He went to Vanderbilt. Just so everybody's clear, he went to Vanderbilt, one of the most prestigious colleges. It's like going to Harvard.
Oh, this is amazing.
He went to Lawrence Academy up here, which is like a super richy prep school that like produces like, you know, like CEOs of companies and like, you know, politicians, like, and, you know, like for like the last 200 years, like one of those sort of old New England prep schools. So I'm in Massachusetts. He's a Massachusetts boy. But yeah, and I actually used to work out at the same gym that he did. Funny enough, it's like a baseball gym here in Auburn where he's from. But yeah, it's funny. He's a character for sure, man.
As if he didn't have the makeup concerns enough, right?
Yeah, I've already got it queued up for after we're done recording.
I can't wait.
Nice. So anyway, on to Clint Frazier. So this guy was obviously the, you know, part of the Hall, or the major part of the Hall. I think, you know, I'd probably take him over Justice Sheffield, who actually had a much better transition over to the Yankees in the Andrew Miller deal. But he's a, you know, power speed guy. Has, you know, solid hit tool. I think, you know, I've seen him about 50 grade there. But, you know, the raw power, he's got a lot of projection. You know, he's 22, you know, spent some time in AAA. He did struggle there. Played well in AA, you know, with the Indians, you know, in a tandem with Bradley Zimmer for that Akron team. But I think I actually think the floor is a little bit higher with Frazier than with Zimmer. Though I don't think the ceiling's as high with Frazier. I think he's a good prospect. He's probably, you know, going to be a center fielder for the Yankees of the future. But he needs to cut down on the strikeouts a little bit. He struggled with that at Triple-A, you know, both with the Indians for a few games and then with the Yankees after the trade.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Clint Frazier?
Well, the reason I threw him on here is I wanted to say I think he's probably a bit overhyped. I don't know if the ceiling is as high as people think it is, and Ralph did a great job touching on that. I like Zimmer better too. The move to Yankee Stadium is not that great for a right-handed hitter. He's not a dead pole hitter though, so he can move the ball around, you know, not necessarily scared of the big left center field gap out there. But Frazier's built a lot like Tyler O'Neill, we kind of talked about, the big muscle, because he's kind of stiff. But he's still got above average speed. He's probably a right fielder because he has a a good enough arm for the spot. Probably he could play left, though, because left field in Yankee Stadium is massive. Then he can cover some ground out there. But he struggled a lot when he came to AAA. The hit tool probably isn't as good as advertised. I'd stick it still average on it. But the bat speed is there, and the bat speed projects with his also projection of getting stronger and, you know, developing a little more. I still think it can be plus. The power is plus now for me. It can grow also if, you know, if he learns to pick and choose his pitches in the zone a little bit more and a bit better off. But I think he's still a bit overrated for me, but he's still a nice player, but I wanted to include him for that.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Clint Frazier?
Yeah, I was high on him before. I'm even higher now. I feel like him going to Yankee Stadium is nothing but a boost, and I don't give, like, literally I don't care about his minor league stats from 100 player appearances with the Yankees at all. Yeah. I literally throw him out the window. What I know about him is that he has a ton of projection, which it is. It's just projection, so we don't know how it's going to work out in the long run, but I do think his upside is higher than Bradley Zimmer's. I made this decision about a year ago when evaluating Zimmer and Frazier really closely, and that's kind of what I'm sticking with here. And I think that the fact that Frazier went to a better ballpark just kind of tells, and a better division to hit in. You know, the AL East has, you know, Boston in there. They have Baltimore. They have, Rogers Center as well. I mean, those are all great stadiums to hit in. And, you know, Frazier has the potential to hit 30 home runs and steal 20, even 30 bases if everything kind of shook right. Amazing athlete. Strikeouts are a thing, but he still hasn't even struck out over 30% except for, you know, in his rookie year or rookie ball, which, you know, with strikeouts not being as big of a thing, I certainly think he has the ability to be an absolute fantasy stud. You know, if you look through the top 50 hitters on the ESPN player rater, Matt Kemp was a top 50 guy. And he only did that with home runs. You see guys like Trey Turner who have speed and power combo. They were in the top 30 and, you know, barely play. So I think that somebody like Frazier, while, you know, if you look at his minor league stats now, they don't necessarily, you know, scream that he's going to be the best player in the world. The projection could possibly be amazing for him.
All right. Well, that is going to wrap us up. Ralph, thanks for coming on, man.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. It was fun. It's been real.
Thank you.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Give yourself some plugs where people can reach you and where they can read and listen to all your stuff.
Yeah, so I post twice a week, actually pretty much three times. We got a podcast going, Fantasy. We have a Fantasy Prospect podcast as well. But I usually be dropping these minor league team previews. I'm going through all 30 teams. I'm going in alphabetical order. Baltimore's going to come out on Sunday. We're going to, you know, move on to the Red Sox on Wednesday. I'm posting on Wednesdays and Sundays over there. You can find me on Twitter at Ralph Lifshitz, LIFSHITZBB. Hit me on there. I'm always around.
Mike, why don't you tell people where you can reach and what you're working on?
Yeah, just reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. You can check out the football shows. You can check out the football stuff I do on Fantasy Pros. You can also check out any baseball stuff I do on the site. And yeah.
Matt, tell people where you can reach what you're working on.
MD Tomp, FWFB. I'm doing my team previews like I did last year. I have two of them completed, the Cubs and the Rangers. One of the systems is very, well, they're both, one's good and one is not as good as it's been in years past, but still good. So I'll let you figure that out for yourself. And just watching Arizona Fall League. And I guess, you know, important thing with Clint Frazier, last year he was pretty much the standout stud of the Fall League, and you saw how much his prospect name rose up on all the charts, and we'll see who does it this year.
Yep. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. You can read all my baseball stuff over at FanGraphs, my football stuff over at FriendsOfFantasyBenefits.com. Definitely give us a 5-star review on iTunes. It really helps us out. It helps us move up the ranks there. And then check out the Fantasy Football and Fantasy Basketball podcast, which were in full swing. But we won't be going anywhere. I know this podcast came out a little bit later this week than it usually would. But we were watching the World Series, let's be honest. So we didn't want to record because Matt was hammered most of the week.
Yeah, I had to be, man. I live in Chicago. I don't know how I'm going to deal with this. But, hey, I live.
All right, that's going to wrap us up. For Ralph, Mike, Matt, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball off season.